I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In October 1950, this song was the number one R&B single in the U.S.
Every time it rains, I think of you, and that's the time I feel so blue. When the rain starts to fall in, my love comes tumbling down, and it's raining, teardrops from my eyes.
Teardrops from My Eyes by Ruth Brown was a pivotal song in American music. Until that time, African American singers sang jazz, blues, or gospel. Then Ruth Brown came along, took the best of each style, added a beat, and gave birth to rhythm and blues.
There's no summer skies, and it's raining, teardrops from my eyes.
During the 1950s, Miss Rhythm, as she was dubbed, turned out dozens of R&B hits and established Atlantic Records as a major player in the music business. As her records topped the charts, she toured the country with Ray Charles, Laverne Baker, Count Basie. Then, in the 60s, her career sputtered. Her recording contract fell through, and with two sons to care for, she took any job she could to pay the rent. Since then, she has made a comeback or two and suffered more than her share of physical, emotional, and musical ups and downs, fighting with Atlantic Records over unpaid royalties, winning a Tony and a Grammy, losing close friends and family, earning a place in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She has recently bounced back from cancer and a stroke and is still singing the blues and fighting for musicians. Connection listeners, how did the Ruth Brown R&B style shape the music we listen to today? And does an artist need to live the blues to sing about them? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And Ruth Brown joins me now in the studio this hour to share her music and her remarkable life story. It's great having you here.
Sweetheart, it is my privilege to be here. Thank you so much.
You know, you started with gospel music, as so many great singers did. In fact, the only music allowed in your home in the early years was religious. How did that set the stage for what was to come?
Well, my father, before me, was a great voice in the church. But as you said, there was a commitment that you have to do. You were not allowed to even listen to what they called the devil's music. But there were a lot of times we snuck out to hear some things, myself included. But I sang in the church, because that was the only place I was allowed to do this with permission. But there were a lot of times where we were available to listening to the radio. I heard the music on the radio. I heard country and western, and I heard what they called jazz at that time. But the blues was not allowed, because that was the devil's music. And I always said, why did the devil get all the good stuff?
And obviously the lure of popular music was enough for you to be willing to sneak out of the house and run the risk of being caught at it.
Yes, yes, that's true. Also, I happen to be the oldest of seven children. My mother was a domestic. My father was a laborer. So there was really not that much money in the house. And one day I realized that I could make a dollar singing. Not that way, because I was a singer to all of the weddings. Whenever the weddings at home, my father got me there and I sang for the weddings. And then one time I looked around and I was singing at a lot of funerals and I didn't even know who the people were. So I start sneaking out, going to the USO, because it was war years coming in at that time. And I got a job at the USO, working behind the soda fountain. But I got a chance to sneak in and get a chance to sing You see, my father was not aware of all of this until somebody told him, Little Ruth is up singing at the USO, you know.
Uh-oh.
So that was a no. So I remember that one night I was on stage and I was doing Chattanooga Choo Choo. And I was on stage and I looked and my father was walking down, coming up to the stage, pointing at me like, okay, come on down, you know. I think he did that first.
What did you do?
I was terrified. So I did what I had to do. I walked down the stage and he met me with his belt. He started opening his belt. So I got a good whipping right there in front of everybody. So I paid the price for that.
But it didn't stop you singing.
Never did.
You next won a talent contest at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. And I wonder if you'd share with us that remarkable story about at one point when you were performing in New York later, when Billie Holiday walked in.
Yes. I was playing at a club called Cafe Society. And I was working with Josh White, who at that time was a singer ahead of Harry Belafonte and everybody. He was the. So I was on that particular show with him. And at that time, I was just so sure that I was going to be Billie Holiday because I heard all of her records and everything. So that particular night, just before I go on my stage, they said to me, guess who is in the audience? And Miss Billie Holiday is in the audience. I could not believe this. So I said to the pianist, who at that time was Dick Hyman, I said, I want to do all the songs that I've been doing, like Strange Fruit, Miss Brown is in Town, all of these things that Billie had done. So I did my whole show. And when I finished, I was doing Strange Fruit. And it got quiet and very eerie into the room. And all of a sudden, I heard a commotion. And I looked to my left, and the table was upset. I saw her when she got up from the table. And she walked away from it. And I didn't understand what the reason was. So it embarrassed me a little bit. So as I left the stage, I had to go back to what was a dressing area. And she was standing there with Josh White. And I had to go past her, and I said, excuse me, please. And she said, well, hello, aren't you going to speak? You know? And I said, yes, ma'am, Miss Holiday. She said, you don't have to call me Miss Holiday. She said, but you're crying. And she looked at me. I was kind of looking funny. So he said, what's wrong with you? And I said, well, I did something wrong. So she said, wait a minute, let me tell you something. And she slowed me down. She said, you're going to be a great singer. I know that. You're going to be a good singer. But if you go on the stage and do what you did tonight, another time like that, they will call my name and nobody will ever know yours. So until this day, I think it was probably one of the best advice that I got. And until now, I always do a song in her memory. I don't try to sing like that anymore, you know, because she told me, don't do that, because there's only me. There's only one.
Well, let's hear some of your style. I want to hear some of Mama, He Treats Your Daughter Mean.
Oh,
that was
boy.
One of your first big hits.
1953.
That is some song, and it was a big hit, and you were what, in your early 20s when this happened?
Yes, ma'am, in my late 20s. And it's amazing, I had forgotten how long it was that I did this song. But it's 50 years ago, 1953. And it's amazing that people remember this. They remember this song. 50 years and they're still dancing to it. So I guess it did something right.
Well, and this is also interesting because this was the song in which we heard your famous tear in your voice, the little squeak. And that actually was a mistake,
Yes, it was. Yes, it was, because I thought my throat was not good. And in the beginning of this song, there's a tambourine. Originally, I'm the one supposed to playing it. Four for nothing. But the moment that I was getting ready to do it, the union walked in. And they said I could not play it because I did not have a card. So there's a man called Hal Jackson who became a disc jockey over the years who is playing that tambourine. And I try to do it. The drummer has to do it now because I wore myself out with the tambourine. But it's amazing. A lot of women hear me and say, I like that song because I had a guy that was not treating me well at that time, you know. So I think the song had some significance to a lot of the women. Mama, he's the meanest man I've ever seen.
And I've heard you sing it more recently.
Yes.
And you sing it very differently than you did when you were in your
20s.
Yeah,
well, life is different.
Sure. There was a lot that you lived in between.
Things change. Yeah. I think if I had a chance to go back and do a lot of the things that I've done in the past, I would sing them a little differently now. Lyrics are more important. You know, there are things that I've lived. When I was a young girl, I didn't feel like that. I was just so happy to get out and work and make a dollar. But as a woman at 75 years old, I've come a long way. And the lyrics mean a whole lot different. They're different now.
Well, we're going to go to a break with another one of your great songs, 5, 10, 15. And then we're going to continue in a few moments with more conversation with Ruth Brown.
Yes, ma'am.
Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection from NPR.
Just give me 5, 10, 15 hours of your love. Give me 15 hours while that shining moon's above.
I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection. My guest this hour is the R&B legend Ruth Brown, and we're talking about the ups, downs, and back-ups of her storied career. Connection listeners, where do you place Ruth Brown in the pantheon of music? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Of course, a big part of her story is how she got her career back on track after years of barely making ends meet. Here's one of the wilder moments from her second life in show business.
All right, hold on to your hats, all you continental rockers, because it's dance contest time. And we've got the wildest judge in town. You listen to her every night on WEDD, and she hosts Negro Day on the Courtney Collins Show the last Thursday of every month. A warm welcome for the queen of Baltimore soul, Miss Motormouth Maybelle herself, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hear it, Baltimore, Motormouth Maybelle. All right, here she comes.
game. And sweetheart, dancing is my game.
Well, Connection listeners, I wish you could all be here in the studio with us because Ruth Brown is loving this. And, of course, that was Ruth starring as Motormouth Mabel in the John Waters film Hairspray. And we should probably mention that during the late 70s and 80s, you made much of your comeback through film and television and Broadway. What were you coming back from?
A lack of respect in the business. There came a time that there was a new invasion of music, the British invasion. And when it came in, at that time, I had two kids. And I was on the road, and I came home, and my baby son was in my mother's arms, and he refused to let me touch him. And I said, well, I guess I better stay home. So the fact that I was going to stay home, the only thing I could do was get a 9-to-5 job because nobody cared about Ruth Brown around eight. I didn't use Ruth Brown, actually, because I had to do different things. You know, I drove a school bus. I worked as a domestic. I worked in the teachers in the Head Start with the children. There were different things I had to do, and I looked around. I just had to leave my music go, you know. But this thing that you spoke about, Hairspray, I had to laugh at that because, once again, that was one of those real lucky things that happened for me. And when it did happen, I didn't right away accept it because I didn't even try out for the role. I didn't know what it was.
How did it happen?
I was doing a show called Stagger Lee in New York on 2nd Avenue Theater. And somebody came to see the show, and one of the talent agents asked, could I talk to Ruth Brown? And she spoke to me, and she said, do you know how to be a disc jockey? And I said, well, I've known quite a few. So they said, we're doing a movie and there's a role for a disc jockey. At that time, I was just looking for work. So she said to me, well, why don't you come and try for it? And I couldn't arrange to do. So they sent leaves for me to read and they taped me. The next thing I knew, they said, you have the role if you want it. I didn't have no idea what it was about. But the funny thing was, a lot of the young people who worked backstage, they said to me, Miss Brown, do you know who John Waters is? What kind of films he does? Are you going to have to take off your clothes? And I said, what? What are you talking about? You know, they said, you better be careful, you know. So, well, anyway, there was no reason for me to be scared of that. But when I got to Pennsylvania, where they're going to do the scene, the first day that I went in, I had not met John Waters. I went into the makeup room. The first thing they did was bring me a white wig. And I said, oh, no. No way, no way. And this is the moment that I met Divine. And he walked in, and he introduced himself to me. And he said, Ruth Brown, put that wig on your head and let's make some money. So every time I get a little check, I remember him. So it was the best thing that I ever did because there's so many young people who know this film.
I want to hear some more of your music because there is a song from your Grammy-winning CD, Blues on Broadway.
Yes.
It came out in 1989. And this one seems very appropriate as it traces your life path. Nobody knows you when you're down and out.
Amen.
Once I lived a life of a millionaire, spending my money, and I didn't care. I took all my friends out for a very good time, bought bootleg whiskey, champagne and wine. But when I began to fall so low, didn't have a friend, had no place to go. So if I ever get my hands on a dollar again, I'm gonna hang on to it till the eagle grins. No, nobody knows you when you're down and out. In my pocket, not one penny, and all my so-called friends, I haven't any. But just as soon as I get on my feet again, oh honey, I know, here they come running, all my long lost friends. It's mighty strange, oh, but without a doubt, nobody knows you when you're down and out.
And you can tell that you know what you're singing about.
Yes, ma'am.
We have a caller who has a memory of you from childhood. Let's go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and hear from Greg. Hi, Greg.
How you doing today? I'll tell you what. When I was a kid, I used to listen to Ruth on WLAC. And I would get it kind of fuzzy, and then some nights I could get it real good. And I still have an old 45. When I listened to your music, it was like someone was just reading to me. It was like I was in this individual school lesson with a teacher, my own teacher. And I was a little kid, but I really loved your music, and that was on hot summer nights before air conditioning. So I have a great memory of that. So every time I think of you, I think of being out in those hot summer nights, listening to you on the radio and playing my record player and listening to your music. So I'm so glad you're on today. You're a big part of my life, big fan of mine.
Thank you so very much. The man was named John Ara.
Yes.
I know exactly who you're talking about. Thank you so much. I needed to hear that today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. We have a lot of people, actually, who want to talk to you. Let's go to Durham, North Carolina now and hear from Mabel. Hello, Mabel.
Oh, my goodness. How wonderful to hear you. I loved you when I was a girl. I thought you were the best thing that anybody ever made. Would you please tell me how I can buy your records?
Oh, hi, honey.
This is kind of an emotional moment, as you might imagine, Mabel.
My records are out there. In fact, they're on the computers and the
CDs
webs
now.
Yes.
Not on the 45s.
I'd love that you can find them. I'm not getting paid, but anyway, yeah, you can find them, honey, if you go to a store where they get what they call the oldies but the goodies. I'm still around.
Mabel, what's your favorite song, if you don't mind my asking?
Durham, North Carolina, my God.
The last one that she sang.
Down and Out?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that one was definitely pretty remarkable. Thank you so much for the call, Mabel. We appreciate it.
Thank
you're
you.
You're wonderful.
Thank you, baby.
And let's go north to Lemonster, Massachusetts now. Hear from Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I was listening a little while ago, and you mentioned how the British bands came in the early 60s.
Yes.
And I wanted to know what your opinion was about how they took the music, the R&B from the 50s, and, you know, things that Americans didn't even know about, and you know, educated us in the blues.
Well, I understand what you're saying, because there came a time that I had to go to Europe to get some respect as for my music. But I don't mind that, because I liked the Beatles very much. And all of the young people who came into the United States and started doing R&B, it was good for us, you know.
Wasn't it sad, though?
It was very sad, because I didn't get any work.
Well, you know, it's just kind of strange that our culture had to be shown to us by another, you know, another country.
And it still happens that way. You know, I've had the chance to go into Europe and Germany, and to go in and I hear my music there. I don't hear it at home. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
I go to New York, and every once in a while I'll get interviewed, or they say come to the radio station and they interview. When I get there, the first thing they'll call me is say, bring a record with you. And I say, for Lord's sakes, I've been recording for 50 years. You don't even have one? Not one? You know? But when I go out to Europe, I don't even have to rehearse. The band, they know the music. You know, it's kind of strange, but...
Well, it's great hearing it today.
Thank you, my sweetheart. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dan, we appreciate the call. And I want to hear some more of your music. You've inspired so many people, and Bonnie Raitt was one of them.
Oh, yes.
There was a duet that you did with her called I'm Gonna Move to the Outskirts of Town.
Oh, yeah.
And let's hear that.
I like that.
Hey, Ruth.
Hey, Bonnie.
Wait, word around the neighborhood is that you find some new place to live. Is that the truth?
Oh, I'm moving. That's real.
Really?
I got no choice. Got to go.
Really?
I'm gonna move way out to the outskirts of town. It's really necessary, girl.
Well?
I'm gonna move way out to the outskirts of town.
Tell me about it.
I don't want nobody always hanging around.
I hear that.
I'm gonna tell my baby we better move away from here. I don't want nobody always hanging around.
I tell you what, Ruth, you know, you can get your man to bring you the groceries.
Oh, I have.
You better bring them every day.
Uh-huh.
That ought to stop that cute delivery boy.
You been peeping.
I think you better keep him away, Ruth.
Me too.
Yeah, I seen him. He's coming around my neighborhood too, and you better move way on the outskirts of town.
Yeah, baby.
Somebody with your history, Ruth, that's a good idea.
You heard about
you don't
me.
Want nobody getting you in trouble.
Yeah,
now.
I know, baby.
Always hanging around.
I know you know. You kind of know.
You know, Ruth, you listen to that, and it's clear that you're having a great time singing together, but you also get the sense that you and Bonnie are really good friends.
You have no idea. Bonnie Raitt has been probably one of the best friends that I've had from the day I met her, especially these last 3.5 years that I've been real ill. This lady has come to my door many times to make sure I was okay. Anything that I needed that I didn't get, she brought it, if I could say that without explaining. She has been and still is one of the best friends that I have. She's a very, very special person.
Who else do you like on the current music scene? Do you have any favorites?
Well, there's always Aretha, only because I knew her as a kid. In fact, all the singers are babies behind me, you know. And there's always my other child, Gladys Knight, There's No Better. And there's Etta James, the great singers, people who do the lyrics. You understand what I'm saying? There are a lot of young people of the new generation. I have not had the time to meet any of them. Not, I would like to meet some of them. But I like Whitney as a singer, you know. But unfortunately, there has not been no place in the new generation for what I'm doing.
I bet they know who you are, though.
I hope so. I hope so.
Connection listeners, we'd like to hear from you, too. How important is it, do you think, for a rhythm and blues singer to live the music they perform? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection from NPR.
Blue, am I blue? Ain't these tears in these eyes telling you? Am I blue? You'd be too if each plan with your man done fell through.
I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection from NPR. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, and of course we'd like to hear from you. But first we're going to hear Cabbage Head from Ruth Brown's 1999 release, A Good Day for the Blues.
Saturday night, honey, when I come home, and baby, I was tired as I could be. I saw this coat hanging up on the rack where I know my coat ought to be. I said to my man, look here, darling man, come here, please explain this mess to me. Whose coat is that coat hanging on the rack where I know my coat ought to be? He said, wife, oh, my darling wife, sweetheart, can't you plainly see? That ain't nothing but an old choir robe that your preacher left here for me. Now, I have traveled this world for a many miles, and darling, I hope to travel more. But I have never seen a choir robe with a fur collar on it before.
Good point. Not too many choir robes with fur collars on it. And this is such a fun song. I understand it's something that your father, who was actually, you know, as you said, not that approving of devil music, this was one he liked.
I heard him doing this song. We had an upright piano at home, and he at some said to that piano, and I heard this song, and I always remember I was listening one night, and my mother said, Barrel, they called my father Barrel, stop playing that dirty music. Little Ruth is listening. And I never forgot this song. because he did all the time, even though he was a church person, you see.
So little Ruth was not only listening, she was really paying attention.
Exactly.
But he really did encourage you. I mean, you not have formal training, and he
No training at all. I just woke up one day and I could sing. And until this day, I remember in my music class, my teacher would say, "Little Ruth," that was Ms. Churchill, she said, "One day you're going to be sorry that you are slipping." I was sneaking out, not going to class to learn the note, because I was ahead of all that. I could hear it in my head, you know. And I never did learn it. Even when I got a recording contract with Atlantic, the first thing they gave me was a book to learn and read. And they gave me a pitch pipe as a birthday present. But I still don't read. I still don't write anything, you know. But if I can hear it, I can do it.
We have some other callers who want to check in with you. North Andover, Massachusetts. Joe's on the line. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I just wanted to tell Ruth Brown how much I loved her music. My wife happened to be home today on vacation, and we started talking. I said, "Can I play the radio?" Because Ruth Brown's on, and I loved her. And she, I grew up in a lily white environment, and gosh, I didn't know rock and roll could sound so good until I heard "Lucky Lips." And I still have that 45, "Lucky Lips." And
oh my goodness.
Can I ask you this? Did you know Laverne Baker very well?
Very well. In fact, I was the one that introduced her to Atlantic Records. She came back after myself.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I knew her in the beginning. She was called Little Sharecropper.
Uh-huh.
Before they called her Laverne Baker.
Oh, really?
And we were good friends, and I sang for her funeral, and I was the last one to stay right there when she was buried. Yes, I knew her very well.
Ruth and Joe, I have to tell you, we do have "Lucky Lips." Would you both like to hear
it? You gotta be kidding.
We have it. Let's hear it.
All right.
When I was just a little girl with long and silky curls, my mama told me, "Honey,
how about it, Joe? Is that how you remember it?
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for having her on. And
thank you, honey.
Best of everything to you, Ruth Brown. Keep
Thank
going.
Thank you, darling. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you, Joe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's see now, from Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Oh,
you've
wow.
got so many fans here, Ruth, I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to hear from Jenna now. Hi, Jenna.
Hello there. Hi, Ruth. How are you?
Hi, Jenna. How are you, honey? I'm fine.
Oh, God bless you. I just wanted to tell you that in the 80s, when I was a young reporter at WTAR Radio in Norfolk, Virginia.
Oh, that's my home.
Yes. They had a big parade for you in Portsmouth.
Oh, honey.
Renamed the street after you.
Yes.
And I covered that story, and I wanted to tell you what a poignant moment it was to see you up there and talk about how you wished your mama and daddy could be there.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you remember that moment?
I remember it very well because as a child, I was not allowed to walk down there. And that day, all of the high schools and the colleges had parade. Remember?
Yes, ma'am. I did report on it.
And my mayor, Ms. Webb.
Uh-huh.
It was so, I cannot tell you what that day was. And you know, I guess you know by now that they now have a Walk of Fame, and my name is there.
Well, it deserves to be.
Thank you.
Jenna, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate you
being
part of the program today.
God bless.
God bless you.
Ruth, it's truly remarkable, I have to say, sitting across the table from you and looking at how wonderful you look and knowing that you have had all kinds of health problems over the years. You've had cancer and a stroke. It clearly hasn't stopped
both
you from...
Both knees had to be replaced.
And here you are still out performing. How physically difficult is it for you to get up there and perform in front of a crowd?
The music, and sometimes I think that I'm really tired. And then I sit here, like, across this table with you, and I hear what people have to say, that my music meant something. You know, I'm still, after 60 years, I'm not rich, but I have things that people just don't have, and that is people calling in like this, say, I remembered you. I remember something about you. And I think that's the most important thing. I don't want them to say Ruth Brown was a good singer, but I could not stand her as a person. I never wanted that, you know. But it is wonderful. It's rewarding right now because we're talking about 60 years. 60 years, you know. And you say, I look good. I was in the mirror for 4 hours before I got here, you know, trying to look like this. You know. Glad if you were on television, I had to
well, it
do
worked.
Something different.
It worked, I can tell you that.
Thank you.
And tonight is another huge night for you, a really big milestone.
Yes. Well, this will be the first time in over 3.5 years that I've been on stage in a club. And this will be the first night with some of my band members. I lost my keyboard player who was with me for 28 years. I lost him this year. So when I see them today, when they get in here, I don't know emotionally what's that going to be like. I'm going to have to probably sit down to do this song. I have to put on eyeglasses sometime to read the lyrics because the stroke took my whole power of speech, and I was in therapy for a long time. But I'm speaking rather well, but there is a time that I can't stand on my feet all that long, you know. So art imitates life, because, you know, I sang a song called If I'm Gonna Sell It, I Got to Sit Down on It. And now that's what I have to do, is sit down on it. But I can hardly wait. They've always been so good to me here at the Regatta. And they have given me a chance one more time, you know.
Well, I wish everybody could come listen to you. We want to take one more phone call from Elizabethtown, Kentucky, this time from Carla. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Ruth.
Hello, sweetheart. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to tell you, I'm a voice teacher here and a singer myself. And I had a 14-year-old girl bring in one of your records and say, I want to sing like this.
Are you serious?
And I use your stuff all the time. I tell my students, let the song sing you, and you live the lyric. And I've got 13, 14-year-old kids singing your stuff and loving it and actually learning how to sell a song. So thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, I never got that training. I asked Tony Bennett one time about introducing me to a vocal coach. And he said, at this point, you don't need to do it. You know, just sing the song. I thank you so much for that.
Thank you, honey.
Thank you.
And break a leg, honey.
Well, you know, don't do that, because at my luck, I just might.
Thanks for the call, Carla.
Thank you.
Ruth, on some level, do you feel as if maybe you're performing better now?
Yes, ma'am.
Than ever?
Yes, ma'am. It's not really, in some people's eyes, probably will not be the best, but in my head, I am so grateful. You know, there's a whole saying about you don't know what you got unless when you lose it. And when I got real ill, there was a way, every time I used to go on stage, I used to always say, my talent is a gift. I woke up one morning and I could sing. I never trained it. And I thought it was a talent that was given to me, that was a God-given thing. When I got ill, I thought, what did I do wrong? Why did they take from me the only thing that I needed to live, and that was my voice? You see? But right now, I realize that all those little opportunities that I had, if I just had a chance to do it again, and I think I will. I may not do it as well. I may not look as well. But the music has always been there for me in my spirit. And there was one time my sons were so close looking out for me now. I remember that one day I was so depressed. I didn't want to hear no music. I didn't want to do anything. And my son said, they took all of my awards and pictures of people that I've met, and they put it all on the wall, and they said, Mom, one day look up and see what you've done. See what you've done. And it gets to this place that is kind of scary. There are a lot of things I'd like to do. Well, time is running short.
I can't tell you how much we appreciate having some of your time during the past hour. And we want to make sure that we have room to listen to a little bit more of your music. Special thanks to Miss Rhythm, Ruth Brown, Queen of R&B.
Thank you.
Truly been a pleasure having you in the studio.
Thank you, sweetie.
And Connection listeners, for more information on Ruth and her upcoming performances, or to continue the conversation, you can go to our forums by visiting our website at theconnection.org. Special thanks today to the folks at Rounder Records, Rhino Records, and the American Experience at WGBH. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
I used to think that I could not go on, and life was nothing but an awful song. But now I know the meaning of true love. I'm leaning on the everlasting arm. If I can see it, then I can do it. If I just believe, there's nothing to it. I believe I can fly. I believe I can touch the sky. Think about it every night and day.